WTC back on the air. I believe this is number 16, episode 16. Ho Ho Hobgoblin, Mole versus an Uncanny Xmas. And this week, for in the spirit of the holidays, I'm not going to insult anybody or do anything like that. I'm actually going to take my chance to introduce my friend Brett, who is one of the co-hosts here with me, of course, and tell everybody what Brett does in this podcast. Brett is largely our editor, as well as bringing some great insight, but most importantly, I think a dry sense of humor that just cracks me up consistently. So how's that, Brett? How are you doing?
So sweet. Thank you.
Thank you. Don't cry over there.
I can't carry on.
Now I had to insult you. All right, Brett. Well, why don't you introduce Chris and tell everybody what his role is?
Well, Chris is the last of the podcast, but he brings a great amount of insight about things that we really don't know about, because there's a lot of things that we don't know about, but Chris just seems to find everything.
Obscure
knowledge. I give him props for that, and he does manage to screw up his email address a few times.
It's happened
a couple of times. And I'd like to introduce you to Keith. He's our chief Twitterer around here. And quite frankly, he's the only one you can trust any factual information from. We all lie, except for him.
He's the voice of reason.
I wouldn't say that. I'd just say, you can trust him.
he's just a reasonable voice.
There you go.
That was very carefully worded praise. Thank you, Chris.
And Keith, why don't you introduce me and be kind?
That's you're our fearless leader. You're the linchpin. You're the key host. We're the co-hosts.
I don't think so.
You're the lead dog.
I am the fearful, not fearless. Maybe not feared. I would like to be feared leader and general jackass, I believe. But either way, thank you very much for the kind words. And, of course, it's the holiday time, so we're going to, as we say, it's Ho Ho Hobgoblin, Mole versus an Uncanny Xmas, because Xmas is not my favorite time of year. But we're going to open up instead with a new regular segment here. We have Keith on Twitter, at Cub Recorder K. So this will be Cub Recorder K's Weekly News.
And we need a little sound effect right there.
The Weekly News with Cub Recorder K.
Big
stuff going on. Even though we are hitting the holiday season, there's still a lot of announcements happening. Valiant has announced that they are back next year in 2012. It will launch on Free Comic Day with an Exo Man of War free comic. It is the first time that Valiant will have a Free Comic Day and offering. They had closed up shop before Free Comic Day was introduced a few years ago. We've also got the big announcement since we were last recording, Avengers versus X-Men starts in March. The zero issue will be Bendis and Aaron writing and Frank Cho art. The central characters of the crossover are Scarlet Witch and Hope. This is sure to be the event that sucks every storyline into it, ruining all of your favorite books for at least 4 months. And the Marvel Season 1 graphic novels also start in February. Season 1 is a series of graphic novels, one per month, more or less, that will introduce, they'll retell origin stories, but in slightly different angles, and they will be slightly updated for kind of modern times. It's not a relaunch, but it is a bit of a restating of the origins. February's Fantastic Four, March is X-Men, April's Daredevil, May is Spider-Man. Curiously, there's nothing announced for June. July is Ant-Man, August is Hulk, and September's Doctor Strange. There is some thought that June will be something special. It's strange that they've jumped it, and there's no Avengers books yet.
Is it Ant-Man something special?
Ant-Man's in July.
Yeah.
Ant-Man's an odd choice. unless they're secretly introducing Hank Pym in the Avengers movie, which would be great. I'm a fan of Hank Pym. And DC's 52 News, they have announced every first arc of the new 52 will be collected in either trade paperback or hardcover starting in May, and the last one's actually running to November. They're spreading them out quite a bit. So by the time we get to the last of the first batch, we'll be into the second batch. And further changes going through the new 52 titles. Sterling Gates is leaving Hawk and Dove as of issue 5. Rob Liefeld will take over as writer as well as artist.
Yay!
Ron Marr. I know, Mo being a huge Rob Liefeld fan. You know, he's got the posters on the wall. Ron Mars is off Voodoo as of number 4. Story is that his script for number 5 was rejected. He was already expected to go, but they put him out the door a little earlier. Gail Simone's leaving Firestorm at number 7. And Fabian Nicieza is Nicieza. Brett, jump in there.
Nicieza.
We'll be leaving Legion Lost at number 6, and Tom DeFalco will be taking over. Brett, I know, Brett, this is like a passing of the torch from two of your absolute least favorite authors, isn't it?
Well, the truth is that because I dislike them both so much, I wouldn't read it before, and I won't read it afterwards. So really, it's kind of a win for me.
So people are getting employment on a book that we can ignore at our leisure.
Yeah, well, the employment will probably only be for like 4 issues, so.
Has DeFalco ever written anything in DC before?
I don't know the answer to your question, but I bet you Wikipedia does.
Yeah, but
I'm sure that he probably has, but.
Well, he's been around for a long time, but I thought he still had an exclusive contract with Marvel to just be able to do whatever he wanted because of his former role as editor-in-chief over there for many
years. I believe that a couple of years ago he let that contract, the exclusivity contract, expire.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that he doesn't have to work it. Well, he obviously doesn't have to work exclusively.
Okay.
And November sales numbers are out. Top trade paperback or collection was Batman Noel. And DC continues to heavily dominate the top 10. Justice League, Batman, Action, and Green Lantern are the top 4, then Point One, and Avenging Spider-Man. Still a lot of weight toward the top 3 or 4 books from DC as far as the top 10 goes. Right now, the unit split is DC up by a couple of points. The dollar split is very close to even in November numbers. Marvel, of course, still publishing nearly twice as many books as DC's doing.
Excuse me.
And so DC 34.5% more or less, Marvel 33% and a bit, so only a couple points between them.
Cool. Chris, why don't we get first your reactions to any of those stories in particular? Is anything you want to just weigh in on?
Just that I personally really like Tom DeFalco's style. It's about the only thing that could make me look at a Legion title. I've never been a fan. Definitely going to check that out.
Okay. Have any of you seen that X-Men War? They put it out on Twitter. I, of course, follow Valiant. Have any of you seen the X-Men War, the new redesign for the armor?
Just the cover of that number 0, yeah. Or that Free Comic Day one. Yeah, that's all I think they've released so far is the cover, isn't it?
That is what they released. But it does give a new look. And, you know, I enjoyed the X-Men War cover or, you know, the armor before. And the fact, though, is I looked at this and thought this looks even better. So, I mean, it has me excited. It won't take me too much to get excited now. Valiant, Keith, can you confirm exactly who is in charge of Valiant Universe for people?
I don't actually know any of the names of those involved. It's definitely not the old guard.
I was hoping for Jim Shooter.
Well, what is
he
doing?
Well, everyone was, of course. No, it's no names that I recognize. I think they've got a whole new crew.
That could be an excellent thing. Could be a failure, but that could be terrific. Also, I want to say...
Do we know if it's still owned by Acclaim?
I don't know. Yeah, you guys have the internet, too.
Well, Mr. News.
You're the cop recorder.
I'm the
general jackass.
The color commentary.
All right. Well, okay, that's fine. Another comment I want to make. I'm just curious. You said that the Green Lantern was number 4. Prior to the relaunch, I don't think it was that high. So I'm curious, in your opinion, anybody out there, if they wanted to weigh in, Do you think, despite the fact that this movie was such an absolute failure in many ways, or viewed as one regardless, both in terms of box office and commercial or critical acclaim, do you think that it raised the awareness of the character to the point where that's the reason why it's doing so well, better than it was doing before?
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not really doing that much better than it was before. I mean, you know, if you look back, I just grabbed March's numbers, and it was the number two book that month, too. So, I mean, it's really just the strength of Jess Johns. They didn't reboot, so it was barely a speed bump for those that were reading the book.
Okay. And my one last comment, just again, if anybody has any ideas on this, you said it was March that we're going to get the Avengers versus X-Men. X-Sanction, of course, started this week. It's one of the books that we read and we'll be reviewing, actually, at the end of the show. That seems to me like an awful long lead time to before they get to that story. Anybody else think that seems like a long lead time into it, or is it just me?
Well, they're just coming out of Schism. So, I mean, they still haven't even gotten all of the Regenesis first issues done. NK X-Force post-Regenesis still hasn't happened, and we're into another crossover already. So X-Sanction, I mean, I guess it's December now, so we've got 2.5 months. I think X-Sanction's bi-weekly. So I guess that time it would work out to start the Zero issue in March for AVX, as it's being called online.
And I think one of the things, too, is it also depends on what the X-Sanction book actually winds up doing. You know, I mean, if it really does anything towards the story, then okay, maybe it's too early, maybe it's not, but, you know, it's possible, like so many miniseries that have come before, that it won't really do anything. It'll just kind of be like a whet your appetite kind of miniseries.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
It's Marvel. Guaranteed it won't do anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point. Okay, well, we're going to move on from the news this week. So thank you very much. The Weekly News with Cub Reporter K. Anyways, what we're going to move on to here next, and like I said, I'm Mo. I hate me some Xmas. So Keith, being a bastard, this was his baby and his idea, but my torture. And it is Mo versus an uncanny Xmas. Keith, why don't you explain the concept of what it is that you made us all go through?
Well, not us all, just you.
Well, they all had to pick.
Yeah, the rest of us are happy to Christmas book.
So, yes, and actually, let's just state that Mo hates a lot of things. The Olympics.
The Calgary Stampede.
Kittens. Stampede.
Women who judge men with small penises.
Women who overcharge men with small penises. So what happened was, about
the new
52,
I hate that bastard.
About a month or so ago, Mo and I were talking, and I forget how we came up in conversation.
I can tell you how we did. You said we should do Christmas books, and I said I don't want to because I hate me some Xmas.
All right, and I said, and I took that as a challenge. Challenge accepted. And I said, how about the other three of us come up with 4 books each, our favorite Christmas comic books, and we'll give them to you, and then we'll all talk about them around Christmas time. And my tree's decorated. My comic books are in your hands. It's time to talk about these Christmas comics.
You decorated.
Do it, Ebba Moser Scrooge.
Now, number one, Brett gave me 5 books because he's a prick. And number two,
one of them was a short story.
Yeah, that's true. But you were worried that you said 4. Originally, you said a couple, and you said 4 because you were thinking there might be some repeats. There wasn't any. All right. Why don't you guys go through and present the books to me? Brett, of course, an Uncle Scrooge fan, gave me a Christmas comic with Uncle Scrooge in it.
That's right, Christmas on Bear Mountain. It's a great story. I'm a big fan of Uncle Scrooge, big fan of the Carl Barks and Don Rosa Scrooge comics. I think they're fantastic. And I love me a good bit of light Christmas stories with some ducks, and so Christmas on Bear Mountain, it's a great Donald comic and a great Uncle Scrooge comic.
Yeah, it was pretty average. I've read much better Uncle Scrooge and stuff, and the problem with this one is that at the end, the payoff just didn't make any sense, and you can't have too high expectations when you're talking Uncle Scrooge for a payoff, but, I mean, seriously, he wanted Donald to be brave, and then he see Donald who passed out and fainted in front of a bear, thinking it was sleeping with him, and it turns out that means he was brave because he wasn't afraid of him anymore. I'm like, what the hell does this have to do with Christmas? It just lost its way for me. So, fail. Don't like it. Hate Christmas. Keith, do you want me to tell you what book did you started off? You gave me something. Now, I really hated you because the first book you gave me was 75,000 DC Christmas stories. That was more than 10,000 pages in 75,000. This thing was huge. What was your first book you had for me there?
I think you're talking about the DC Holiday Special 1980. This was all original stories done in 1980, and all of the short stories featured the Christmas star. It's one of my favorite Christmas books because it is such great characters. It's great creative teams. There's a Frank Miller and Danny O'Neill Batman story in it. There's a Jonah Hex story, Superboy and the Legion, Sergeant Rock, and then a series of story. There's a series of incredibly short stories based on the House of Mystery and the other ghost books, the other ghost story books.
And Keith, I liked it. I really wanted to not like it. I'm going to say, this was actually the second book I read from you. The first book was just massive. And then I opened up this and saw another massive book. And I was like, well, Keith doesn't actually want me to enjoy Christmas stories. He's just dropping huge books after knowing I've agreed to read them just to mess with my mind. And then I open it up, and the first story is this Jonah Hex story. Michael Fleischer wrote it, and it was just awesome. A really great story. Not all of them work for me in this Star of David's, storyline that is kind of the thread they're weaving through it. But that really worked for me. Is it the House of Mystery, or what was it there? What do they call those characters there? The
House of Mystery, House of Secrets, yeah. And Tale of the Unexpected.
Yeah, those were really good, too. And I am a big Denny O'Neill fan, so loath as I am to say it, Keith, I liked your Christmas book. Well, and then you had Chris. First book I opened from him, this Christmas book, is Hitman, with a gun in the mouth of the cover is a gun in the mouth of a Santa Claus. And I thought, how did this not cause a controversy? This is about the most offensive looking cover I've ever seen. But Chris, tell me about that book.
Hitman 22. Hitman is one of my favorite series. Hitman 22 has our heroes, Tommy and Nate, taking out a hit on a zombie-fied Santa in order to afford presents for Christmas. What gets more jolly than that? Does it better?
Yeah, I didn't like it. Like many Hitman books, this book thinks it's far more clever than it is. I didn't like the little narration going on with the rhymes. I can't believe anybody would make somebody read rhymes. Personally, seriously... at the end, it's sitting there going, love Christmas or you'll get a 22 in the head was basically the moral. I was going, where did that come from? It doesn't even make any sense. Like I say, I think Hitman's, I think it's a little overrated, so, it doesn't do it for me. Brett, you also dropped in a Jingle Bell story for me.
That's right. The Jingle Bell character from Paul Dini. This is, I think she's a comedy character that kind of, I don't know, is willing to fly against the face of some of the good things Christmas, but it always turns out in the end. And I find the character pretty funny.
Yeah, I find the character just completely forgettable. I mean, it's not a bad book, but it's just you fly through it and you put it down, and I don't remember 2 seconds later what it was. So, again, it's at least it's not overly Christmassy. I mean, Santa's kind of a dick. I kind of appreciate that. Just like I appreciate the idea of Santa Claus being shot in Christmas, but that doesn't mean I necessarily enjoyed this. Keith, so talk about the other massive Christmas book you dropped for me.
This will be DC's Christmas with the Superheroes number two. Number one of this was a reprint book. Number two was original stories. And it has some real greats. Paul Chadwick doing a Superman story. John Byrne doing Enemy Ace, a completely silent story. Dave Gibbons and Gray Morrow on Batman. There's a Schanauer Wonder Woman. And a story that is one of the only post-crisis appearances of Supergirl. She's in a Dead Man story. And then there's a pre-crisis Justice League story with Barry Allen and Hal Jordan.
Yeah, it blew. Just hated all of these. I was hating this whole thing, really. I thought this Chadwick story sucked. I mean, and I'm a huge fan. I just thought, often is the case when you're doing a Christmas story, the characters are so pathetic that I don't really care about them in the end. And of course, that's part of being these characters, these pathetic characters that find some love or some light on Christmas is supposed to be the story. And this is so consistent. It's so trite to me. But then I got to that Dead Man story, and it was wicked. And when Kara showed up, and that's who it was, this character, they didn't even mention that this is Supergirl. They just said Kara, so you had to know the pre-crisis continuity and get that. I thought that was clever, and that was awesome. That last story went out on a high note. Too bad there was 14,000 stories prior that I did not enjoy much. Chris, you dropped
well,
a book.
I picked this book specifically because that Dead Man story was in it. That was the story I wanted to get to, but I made you read all the rest of it for you.
Yeah, you are a dick. Chris, you dropped me a Lobo book.
A Lobo? Yes, I did. Lobo's Paramilitary Christmas Special. I sort of was theming these books on Santa getting beat up. And he takes it in the butt in this one pretty good. It's a pretty funny story. Has Lobo. It's probably the best thing Lobo has ever done.
You know what? It might be. I really enjoyed this. I mean, this book is sick and twisted and offensive in every manner. And it was really good. Really pissed on the grave of Christmas. My, I enjoyed this book. Thank you, Chris. You know what? Here's the thing. This book is basically the idea that characters like the Easter Bunny have put out a hit on Santa Claus, and Santa Claus is actually a tyrant who just tortures his elves and stuff, and then Lobo kills him. Really cathartic. I love that. That was good stuff. Thanks, Chris. Brett, how about the Superman Christmas story you dropped for me?
Well, it's one of the pre-crisis Superman stories. It's kind of like got a Grinchy character in it who's trying to take away all of Christmas. And so, of course, Superman has to kind of step in and help save the day. What I really liked about it was the way Superman stepped in to save the day.
I did, too. I love this book. This was awesome. Keith, you got to read this. Basically, Santa's gotten too fat, and he's being, well, I mean, it's not his fault. Somebody's trying to ruin Christmas. And has made him fat with some like evil formula. But point is, he's fat. He can't fit down the chimneys. So Superman's like making him exercise and dropping him in like volcanoes to get him to sweat off the fat and stuff. And of course, Santa's like, can I just rest for a little bit? And he's like, no, get your fat ass up there. Do some more exercise. Superman was a complete prick. This was hilarious. I think this might even have been a Siegel and Schuster story. Like this was old school. This was awesome stuff.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. It's great. I love this. 1947, I believe. 1947. So this was an awesome, awesome book. I have no idea how the hell you found such a rare thing, Brett. But thank you very much for getting me this. I guess through a reprint or something. But
I have a large collection of random Christmas mess.
Yeah, and this was great stuff. So Keith, you know, why don't you introduce your next book for me? Because I don't remember what you gave me.
Well, I have a Dan Jurgens Adventures of Superman issue.
Oh, it's awesome.
This would be when Jurgens was writing Adventures of Superman before he took over Superman. And it's a self-contained story that tells about a teenage Clark Kent who goes to a New Year's party, and his friends have had a bit too much to drink. Clark doesn't know that he has powers yet, just that he can have drinks and doesn't seem to be affected. And there's a car accident, and one of his friends is put into a coma. and then the story picks up. The framing sequence is in the present day of the story when this boy has still been in a coma for all these years. So it's not certainly not a light Santa kind of Christmas story, but it is quite poignant.
You know, this is a tremendous story. This was Dan Jurgens at his best. I'm not saying it turned me around on how I feel about Christmas, but I had to admit when I read this, I was like, oh, Keith actually put some good stuff in here, and he's making me admit there's good Christmas stories. This was, like you say, not Christmassy, but just a brilliant character study. And one of those stories that really reveals who Clark Kent was. And when the Clark Kent character works, the Superman character works. So I thought this was probably the second best, or very close to the best, of the 13 books I read. This was really good, Keith. Thank you. Chris, you dropped in a Hellboy for me. Hellboy Christmas Special. Tell me about that one.
Well, it's a Hellboy Christmas Special. I'm not going to summarize it because, well, quite frankly, I think people should read these books on their own, especially since it's Hellboy. It's so good. And it is the Christmas Special. Hellboy Christmas Special number one.
So what you're saying is this was the Hellboy Christmas Special number one. And
that's it. To paraphrase the story for Mike Mignola would be doing it an injustice, so I won't do it. All you need to know is Hellboy and it's Christmas.
Well, I'll give you guys a little bit more, and that I did not like this. And I'm a big Hellboy fan, but this was a short story for Hellboy, and I don't know if it's the inexperience as a writer of Mignola that caused him to not be able to pull this off as well in his execution as he wanted. I didn't know what was going on. I found it very, very confusing. Didn't find it poignant. It just was sort of there. And then he had a bunch of other characters in there, that little mini stories that to me were just thrown out there and just didn't work for me. The best part of this was actually a prose story that was kind of freaky, that somebody told a real life experience that happened to him. But I mean, I can't recommend picking up an entire book for that. I mean, you can find those on the internet for free on blogger sites anyway. So it didn't do a damn thing for me. Brett, tell me about your Sergeant Rock.
Well, I think that Sergeant Rock is a great character when it comes to Christmas. The idea of being over in World War II, over in Germany, and during the Christmas holidays, I think is kind of a poignant element. And so I think that for me, it was just a matter of which Sergeant Rock story I was going to pick. And this one, I thought, you know, there's a guy who's really wants to kind of, you think he's going to go AWOL so that he can try to run back to his family, but he winds up finding another family and kind of helping them along with Christmas. And Sergeant Rock finds him and, you know, and winds up bringing him back, and they kind of, you know, save the day, of course, as Easy Company does. But, you know, I really like Sergeant Rock, so.
Yeah, I think that this was pretty good because it was a Sergeant Rock story, but not good at all because it was a Christmas story. It was not the best Sergeant Rock story I've ever read, but because I enjoy the characters, all right. But as far as, like, the Christmassy thing, screw it. The other two stories, I mean, of course, it's a Sergeant Rock story, so I think there was three stories in the book. It was the worst of the three stories in the book. Keith, what do you got?
Now, my last one is a bit of an oddity because I found it on a website. I don't actually know where it was sourced from. It's a Batman story called On a Day of Christmas, and it's text with art, but it's a very simple story. It's got really interesting art, and it's telling a fairly straightforward Batman story. It was just the style of it was what appealed to me.
I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't think it had a point. It seemed to be retelling the Batman storyline and his origin for the billionth time and trying to ring it into Christmas. Oh, I hated it.
Diminishing returns from Keith.
Hey, you had a good one.
I did. I think I still won.
You had one that did kick my ass. I'll give you that. I will give you that. You had one that absolutely kicked my ass. And speaking of one that kicked my ass, Chris, your last one was Starman.
Starman number 22. Excuse me. if this one does not tug at your heartstrings, you may be dead inside. It's just our hero, Starman, befriends a homeless Santa Claus and helps him get a locket back. We meet friends along the way. And it brings a tear to my eye just even thinking about it.
I wouldn't go that far for me, because I have no heart. But this is really good. This Starman is, again, consistently was one of the best written series ever, I think. And what you had here was a book that, much like the Superman book that I talk about, was all character driven. It's not about any action or violence or jokes or anything. It's about getting into the core of humanity. And that is when Christmas is at its best, when these Christmas stories do this. There is some really good stuff here. This book was a 10 out of 10. So, you know, whereas, and the Superman was a 9.5. Like, this was great stuff. So thank you very much. This was as good as a Christmas story gets. Brett, you had some final, I think you had one last book because you dropped one more than the others.
That's right, because I have a little short story, Transmetropolitan short story. And let's be honest, I mean, if, you know, nothing embodies the hatred of the Christmas spirit like Spider Jerusalem. So I figured that, you know, Ebba Moser Scrooge, if you want to hate the Christmas spirit, then have a little Spider Jerusalem.
Yes, this was foul-mouthed, bitter, angry at Christmas. It was great. This was what I wanted. I really enjoyed this. This is just, you know, it's not the best Transmet book you're ever gonna read, but it's a Transmet Christmas book. It is exactly what you thought it would be. So, Brett, good choice. Chris, thank you. Keith, I still hate me some Christmas.
Well, we tried, Mo. You sure. Got a couple of stories.
Actually, one of the stories I talked about Brett having a Sergeant Rock, but I think one of those stories, one of those Christmas stories, one of the big books you dropped for me also had a Sergeant Rock story in that Star of David.
The 1980 one, yeah.
Yeah, that also, that Sergeant Rock, I think, was better than the one Chris or Keith, or sorry, there's three of you, damn it. I'll get you eventually. Better than the one Brett dropped. I think that was really a, I like that one quite a bit. I think that one was very poignant. So if Brett, you haven't had a chance to read that one, get that copy from Keith, because I think you'll enjoy it.
I actually dove into my Sergeant Rock collection looking for something, because I remembered that there were a bunch of Christmas stories there. Turns out every second story for Sergeant Rock was a Christmas story. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
There are so many.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. Screw Christmas. So anyways, Keith, you have something you want to say there?
Yeah, I just want to wrap this up. The goal was to convince Mo that there are good Christmas comic books. I can't do anything about his hatred of Christmas, but I can prove that there are good Christmas comic books. I did ask my friends on Twitter to come up with some of their favorites. Scott Davis also picked the Lobo Paramilitary. My friend Matt picked the Dead Man story that I had mentioned. Other ones were Jim Smith, the finale of No Man's Land, which is another dark Christmas story. Jordan Jennings, the week 33 of 52, which is the pause before the third act. And our friend Mike Luoma, X-Men 143, which is Kitty Pryde against a demon on Christmas Eve, John Byrne's final issue. And then another one, Ed McFarlane picked the Sin City Silent Night.
Okay. I'll say this. I don't remember any Christmas stories. I didn't think were anywhere any good. They were forgettable. But I will not forget the Starman. I will not forget the Superman story that you guys gave me for sure. So thank you very much. In fact, there's a few of these I won't forget that all of you gave me. But yeah. So, okay, let's move on here. Speaking of things I hate, we're on to a regular feature. This used to be called Burn This Book, but we're now calling it. We changed the name. It is now, Keith, what is it called? Black Canaries Birdcage Liner.
Birdcage Liner. Black Canary's Birdcage Liner. We've changed our rating system after long hours of analyzing.
About 10 seconds is what he means.
Bag burn, our bag by burn that we used in the New 52. We've decided on the highest rating is Cat's Meow. The Catwoman's Meow, I should say. The middle rating is Captain Average, and the lowest rating is Black Canary's Birdcage Liner. And we're going to get back into reviewing. We'll still be doing some independents, but we're doing some mainstream books as well.
Okay, but what we're going to do right now is each highlight a series that we think is a Birdcage Liner. I'm going to open up on this one. I chose the Maximum Carnage crossover. This blew donkey balls. I mean, this was so awful. Basically, what happened was you had Superman and had the death of Superman. You had these great sales. And then it was announced that DC was breaking the bat. And Marvel decided they wanted to counter this by doing their own crossover. They didn't really have anything planned, so they had a hot character in Venom and an even hotter character at the time in Carnage. And they did this crossover. This thing went on for 4 billion issues. Just kept going. The thing about Batman and Breaking of the Bat and this entire Nightfall storyline was it was breaking up to the point where an exhausted Batman finally faced this monster Bane and Bane broke his back. But they hadn't seen them face off. Whereas you saw Spider-Man face off with Carnage in issue 1 and in issue 2 and in issue 5 and in issue 15 and in issue 70,000 or whatever it was. So it was just went on and on and on. It really blew. The worst, if it wasn't for the fact that shortly after, and it led into the Ben Reilly saga and all that clone stuff, this might be the worst Spider-Man thing ever. Now, it did give us two great things. While the storyline was just terrible, it went on forever. And it had a bunch of minor characters introduced. You had your Silver Sable and your Cloak and Dagger and all that crap that nobody really needed. And Captain America. Yeah, that didn't stand out as being odd. So anyways, you got a video game that came out for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System and the Mega Drive, the Maximum Carnage. And with it, you got packaged the music, the theme music, which was from the great alternative band Green Jelly, a great, great, great rock song called Carnage Rules, which, if Brett doesn't mind, I think we should drop into this podcast right now for everybody to hear. That song is awesome. About 3 minutes of punk goodness and absolutely Carnage rules. So it did give us that. It did give us a pretty good beat 'em up video game. Gave us a bunch of shitty reading. Anybody else want to comment on Maximum Carnage?
You know, I'm going to comment. You know, it's not a good storyline, not in the least. But the thing that I find the most amusing is your 70,000 parts. It's actually only a 14-part series.
Oh, only 14 parts. You're right. That's nothing.
But based
that's
on
four books,
your...
That's between four books, and that means it went on for 3 months and 2 weeks or something like that, or a week. Like, seriously.
Well, four books, and it would have been that Spider-Man quarterly, which was a double
Unlimited,
book. So
yeah.
That's probably why it feels like, well, yeah.
I will say this for it. It got me off Spider-Man before I suffered through the Clone Saga, I believe.
Yay!
What's that line from Platoon? You want to get it in the first few days so you don't have to suffer as long.
All right.
Yeah,
who wants to jump in?
Else.
Chris, why don't you give us your Birdcage liner?
All righty. This book, and Keith's going to laugh because I actually love the book, but I can't justify it in any way as a good comic book. So I'm definitely trying to take this out of my yearly reading schedule. I'm talking about the 24-issue run of Godzilla, King of Monsters from Marvel, written by a good writer, Doug Monk. I can never figure that one out.
That's your job.
Mensch.
I'm going to put money at that, not Mensch.
Okay. Fair enough.
But anyway,
several pronunciations.
Brilliant idea to actually put Dum Dum Dugan as the lead protagonist in this book.
Oh, no.
To actually have him running a S.H.I.E.L.D. agency was ridiculous. It's not a good book. If you're interested in reading something from maybe an Ed Wood point of view, definitely go that way. But it goes down as one of the worst reads I've ever had. I just can't believe it's so bad that I read it about every year.
I have the Essential Collection.
Yeah, Brett has the Essential Collection, and we were at the same comic store. It was on sale. And I picked it up, and I carried it around the store. And then at a certain point before I hit the cash register, I went, what am I doing? It's got to be something I could spend $5 on this thing.
There's nothing essential.
I don't have the Essential.
Nothing essential in that read. Awesome. Keith, it's your turn.
Well, I'm going to go with, everyone knows how much I loved Superman from John Byrne through Ordway and Jurgens, and Death of Superman specifically. And over the summer, I was rereading everything, and I wondered how far I could read before I would start feeling the less than love. And as it turned out, it was exactly the same storyline that I stopped reading it, stopped collecting the book to begin with. And that is The Trial of Superman. It follows up the Death of Clark Kent storyline, which was middling. But the Trial of Superman, this was 40,000 parts. This thing dragged on for 6 months.
Oh, this was brutal. You're
no
right.
Sense.
Oh.
and the way that, the scene that Chris said that Carnage, at least Carnage got him out of the Clone Saga, well, at least this got me out of Red and Blue Superman, because I was out before that thing came along. What a terrible, terrible crossover. It makes no sense. He's just in space for ages, and there's, for some reason, he can't get home, but it never's really clear.
I have nothing to say on it, but you're right. Awful.
I was overwhelmed.
I forgot how awful. It's not Max. I mean, I don't know if it's Maximum Carnage. It didn't give us a great song or a pretty good video game.
That is true. Yeah, see, it's funny because I remember, because Keith, you loaned me your, like, 10 years plus of Superman, and I was reading through them with you know, great blocks of time off, but I decided that I was going to really power through your last couple of years, because that was the hardest time, and that was right in the middle of that hardest time, and I just remember thinking, why would anyone buy these books? why would anyone write this? Like, did they ever have a plan for it? Because, you know, in the early days after Byrne
relaunched
Superman.
Can I just jump in? I'm just curious. Who's the creative team on this? Wasn't it a pretty good creative team at the time, too?
Well, Ordway had left. Jurgens had stopped drawing. And his stuff was never as strong when he was writing instead of writing and drawing. At that point, it would have been Simonson was doing Man of Steel. Roger Stern, I think, was on at that point. And, I mean, most of the team from...
Carl Kiesel, I guess, probably. Okay, Brett, go ahead.
Kiesel, I think, would have been writing at that point.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Brett, what were you saying?
Well, just, you know, just after the Byrne relaunch, you know, the editorial was so very strong on the Superman books. The stories tied together really well. The storylines didn't take that long, generally, to reach a conclusion. There was always something building. And then by the time you were here, you know, it was like there was no editorial view on it at all. I mean, the story, like Keith said, you know, the storyline takes 40 years. You know, it's a disaster. There's more disasters to come afterwards. You know, it's like this, like, airplane spinning out of control. And this time, Superman's not there to save it.
It's followed up by Electric Superman and then Superman Red and Blue.
I think we may have covered in an early edition.
Yeah, Superman Red and Blue in our first edition.
Yeah. Chris, aren't you glad that you've always hated Superman so you weren't put through this?
I am. This is a big payoff. I mean, I went back afterward and read The Death of Superman, but I didn't read it while it was coming out.
Nice.
But I'm glad I wasn't even tempted to follow it up much past that.
It's just there's an element where when it's good, it's really, really good. But you need to know when to get out of it, because once it drops hard.
It is like X-Men that way, or so many other families of books. Batman was like that. That's once it started downhill.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're perfectly acceptable. It's perfectly acceptable to grab chunks and then leave whole gaps in Spider-Man or X-Men or Superman. You know, just take what you like.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Oh God, don't be. Here's advice for comic collectors. Do not be afraid to have issues 1 to 6 and 13 up of a series.
That's true.
You don't need to have those. If they're no good, don't have them.
That's true.
Yeah, you'll just kick yourself when you read them again. Believe me.
Although I am curious, how do you feel about Roger Stern, Keith, on a whole?
I like some of his older Marvel stuff, particularly when he was working with John Byrne. The two of them were such good friends that they created very well together. They did, was it Avengers that they worked on? And there was a few things around that era that I quite liked.
His Spider-Man was...
Because I'm more familiar with his Marvel stuff, so...
His Spider-Man and his early work on Superman were both tremendous. He had a great take, you know, I mean, that's the thing is that when he was... I mean, he was there during things like Panic in the Sky and you know, these really good storylines. And like I say, his Spider-Man, his Spider-Man versus Juggernaut storyline was tremendous. And I talked about earlier in an earlier episode, the single best comic book storyline maybe I ever bought was the Boy Collected Superman. That was Roger Stern. Or Spider-Man, sorry. That was Roger Stern. So, I mean, yeah. But then again, he also came back and decided to finish off that Hobgoblin storyline. So... Brett, your birdcage.
Ho, ho, Hobgoblin.
You know what? Brett, that should be your birdcage liner if it isn't. But what's your Black Canary birdcage liner?
Well, today, because of a tie-in to something that's going to come up, I am going to go with when I read any issues that I read of Witchblade. Now, when I first started Witchblade... you know, because I was interested at the beginning, when Image started up, I was interested in most of the books that... You know, as any good comic collector should be interested in a new number one. And I read it and I thought, oof, that's not very good. You know, the character is just not really interesting. The power's kind of lame. And I thought, you know, there's really no way that this book is going to last any length of time. So, of course, you know, it still is going. And I know I've read issues in between that, and... Every time I read them, I'm shocked with how little I like the Sarah Pizzini character and how little interest I have in the overall storyline. So I'm going to line Black Canary's Birdcage with this book.
I remember when this book came out, being in my local comic shop, and the owner, Kelly, of a place called Red Skull here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, still in business, thank goodness for Kelly, but many years ago there, I remember being there, looking at it, picking it up, flipping through a couple pages and turning to him and saying, I wouldn't wipe my ass with this because I have too much respect for my ass. And Kelly's response was something along the lines of, not that he's a dumb guy, but really, what do you say to that? Because you want to sell the book, and, well, I just cut it down, and I hadn't even read it. Thanks, Brett, for reading it for me.
Yeah, I hate to disagree with you. I don't,
no, you don't
hate the book as much. Sorry?
No, you don't. Disagreement is what makes our podcast different than all the others.
Okay. I would like to disagree with you then. I bought the compendiums of this because it tied over with The Darkness, one of, not a favorite, but a book I read and liked. Not a great book, but I don't think it deserves to be put in a pile with some of the other books we've talked about. It's fairly generic. Got some hot chicks in it. That's really all you can ask out of an Image book sometimes.
All right.
Well, from that era. Yeah.
All right, Brett, why don't we just kick right off that, unless Keith has something to say on that issue number one. No? Good.
I don't. Has Keith even read an issue of Witchblade?
He's read one.
I'm sure at some point I did. I know. I've, every once in a while I get her confused with a different character.
It's just, did you know you watched the TV series? I mean, I loved Yancy Butler. I thought she was hot as hell, but I couldn't watch that crap.
It was painful.
Yeah. All right, Brett, here we go with We Talk Comic Book Reviews. We Talk Reviews, is that the name of it? It is for this week, because we haven't actually come up with one. Brett, why don't you open us up with the first book we're going to review?
All right, well, you know what? I'm going to open us up so nicely with Witchblade 150. Again, the shock for me was just finding out that the series was still running, and really that this is... finding out also that this was the last issue that Ron Mars would be writing, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the artist's name. This one's just not going to happen for me. But, you know, so I thought, okay, let's give this one a shot. Let's see if it makes any sense to me whatsoever. Now, you know, the story actually does make sense to me. It's the Sarah Pizzini character kind of realizing this year, well, being tracked down by IA, and then, or like, who's saying, like, basically, you have to either, you can be the Witchblade, or you can be a cop. You can't be both. And, you know, so at the end of it, you know, she makes her decision, and it's all wrapped up perfectly nicely. The only thing that really got me about this book was that it was just boring. Nothing happened. She made her decision, and that was it. There's no, like, bites. There's no interest. It's just okay. I'm happy making my decision. That's it. Bye-bye. The art on the other side was very nice. I really like his art.
Keith, your thoughts?
I also really like the art. I'd be interested to go back and take a look at a few other issues of this creative team. I know Mars has been writing it for an extended period of time, 80 issues or 70 issues, something like that.
I think it's 70, yeah.
And I was able to understand the story, but had a bit of the same feeling as Brett that this was really the epilogue of his run. And so coming in, I understood it. This was a bit of a test for us of what was the title we came up with, Brett? It was
Someone's First Comic.
Someone's First Comic Book. Marvel used to have a rule that every comic was someone's first comic, so you should be able to understand enough of the story. And which is why when you read those in the essential issues, you kind of have, in the essential collections, you skip a page because every issue gives you an update of what's been going on. I did understand this one coming in cold, having not read any Witchblade that I remember. But as I said, it's not an action issue. It's an epilogue issue. It's really settling out what I assume was a longer storyline that resulted in her boss finding out that she has the Witchblade. If I'm using it right now. I was interested in going back a little piece, though. I'd be, you know, particularly for that artist. It is interesting to get this at the very end. I now know how the storyline ends, and I know that there is a finite point to it. The preview at the end of it for the next arc did not grab me at all, so I'd be more interested in going back than I would in going forward.
Yeah, again, this one actually struck me as the perfect jump-off point for Witchblade.
Good thing I only read one issue then. Chris, your thoughts?
No, as I said, I have the compendiums, which comprise the first 100 issues of Witchblade.
Dude, you are brave.
Reading this 150, I was actually surprised that I hadn't missed anything in 50 issues. Nothing has happened since I left the book.
It just saved you $80.
I didn't say I paid full price for the compendiums.
Chris will buy anything, guys. Have you noticed? Well, seriously, it's on sale? I'll buy anything.
But it was a nice goodbye issue. If I was a regular reader and liked what they were doing and they had to leave, it was nice to just sort of wrap things up and set things up for the next creative team. But beyond that, it was pretty much a who cares issue. If you weren't a reader before, this is not going to attract you to what they're doing. It was just sort of goodbye. Here's what you've read so far.
Now, Chris, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was IA, like in the first 100 issues there that you have read, was Internal Affairs actually looking into her at that point as well?
I believe so.
Because I'm thinking, how long does it take Internal Affairs to actually figure out that she has the Witchblade and actually get to the point where it's just like, you make that decision? Because if it's over 50 issues, that's a long frickin' time.
Yeah, as I remember, there was a couple different investigators. You know, they shut down an investigation, they started one up. I don't remember it being a huge thing. It was something that was happening in the background of the series.
Brett, it's what's known as a slow burn.
Yeah,
very slow burn. I'm going to give you my review real quick. I thought this was I would give it in the average range, that Captain Average. Keith said almost everything I was going to say to the T. Falls flat. I want to go back. I don't want to read all of Ron Mars's run. I want to read it with this artist because I thought this was the best art I'd seen in forever. The guy's a digital artist. He doesn't draw. He uses a computer programming to draw, and it created just visuals that I loved. I went to the next story arc. They have like an 8-page preview. And I don't know how it is that this book that I've never read before, and I've never read an issue of this, and I totally knew what was going on in Ron Mars' storyline, even if it fell flat. And then they jumped to a jumping on point for 151 to give us this preview, and I have no idea what the hell's going on. So I don't know how you fail that badly. That's all I'm going to say about this. Brett, next book.
All right, Avengers X Sanction number 1. So I assume that this is going to be really one of our start off points for the Avengers versus the X-Men AUVX crossover coming out next year. Basically, it involves Cable beginning to kidnap the Avengers. Now, you know, the problem that I have with this book is the fact that they've tried so desperately in Marvel to make Cable a relevant character for so long.
And
so now they've brought in his daughter, Hope, who is the linchpin of the AVX storyline. And this book, to me, really, like, I don't like Cable. I didn't find that there was anything that happened in the book. And I'm worried that I could read this entire miniseries and just feel like nothing, it all happens, period. And so I have to give it, I think I'm going to put it on the birdcage lining too, just because it really didn't do anything for me. I wanted to like it, but I didn't.
Keith?
I really wanted to like it. I've been trying to get back into the X titles, and I keep being let down. It feels like trying to get back together with the ex-girlfriend, and then you figure out that all of the things that you didn't like about her are still there. I'm going to jump him back off the X titles if this is the feeling, if this is the flow I'm getting. I think I'm down to two already that I'm getting. The art was only so-so. I'm not a Jeff Loeb fan. The ending is just terrible. The ending, I almost feel like spoiling it just because.
If you don't, I will. Seriously, I will.
The ending is the Captain America gets shot, and the ridiculousness of doing anything like that. We're going to get some kind of stupid, he shot a bullet into the wall to scare him, and it's Captain America, so he doesn't get scared. Kind of, I'll put money that that's the start of the next issue.
Well, of course, because you hear, you see the blam over black,
That's right.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not really a spoiler because nobody reads that and goes, Captain America's dead! And that's why it sucks. That's why you're not killing him anyway, so why the hell do that? It's because Loeb has run out of ideas. It's because Loeb, somewhere doing the first season of Heroes, it ruined his creativity. And he's sucked ever since. Chris, your thought? That's actually my review. I'll just jump in. Just because I've already done, basically. Ed McGuinness' art, I've always enjoyed his art, and I think he has gotten better over the years. Kind of an exaggerated style, but adding more detail, so I do like his art, but doesn't mean that this isn't a Birdcage liner, because it sure as hell is. Chris, somebody needs to shit on this book, and I just did.
No. I hated this book. I've never been a Loeb fan. I do have a couple questions about it. Has anyone ever heard of the Lethal Legion before?
Yep.
Yeah? Where the hell did they appear before?
You know, I want to say that they actually appeared in the West Coast Avengers. Now, I could be wrong here, because I don't think that the Lethal Legion are a terribly important team in Marvel history,
didn't they seem to be Spider-Man? Were they Spider-Man characters, essentially, or what characters were they? Like, these characters...
Well, they were all Avengers rejects at one point or another.
Well, I want to say that...
These are guys that I just don't remember being able to hang out together. I mean, Grim Reaper and the Radioactive Man and Whirlwind, I don't see them standing in the room together.
That would be West Coast Avengers, yeah. They the West Coast Avengers at some point.
Yeah, they first appeared in Avengers 78. Second version appeared in Avengers 164, and third in West Coast Avengers Volume 2, Number 1, and then fourth Avengers West Coast 98.
And see, I didn't understand anything that was going on in this book. So I didn't understand anything that was going on in this book. Nevertheless, those guys, there was so little about this book that made sense to me as a person who hasn't read Marvel in 5 years. As a regular reader, only occasional issues or storylines, that when I'm reading this, the farthest thing from my mind is, who the hell is Lethal Legion? I'm going, how the hell is, who the hell is the Red Hulk? So.
Okay. The other problem I had with this book, I actually like McGuinness' art, but it felt like he was trying to out Liefeld with his drawing of Cable.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
A lot of punches.
Yeah, but anyway, definitely Birdcage. This pathetic. It's not a good sign for the next year or so of Marvel. If this is the start, of what Marvel's doing, it's not good.
Wow, we've pretty much all agreed on all the first two books. Let's try and ruin that with the next one, Brett. What did you think of whatever the next book is you're going to throw out there?
All right. Well, I'll jump out to something that I think we'll probably all agree on. I'm going to go with The Ray, Number 1. Now, this is a book that I follow Jimmy Palmiotti on Twitter, and he's been retweeting people who really like the book. And so I thought to myself, hey, The Ray, this is a character that I used to kind of not mind. And there's a glowing review for you. But
well, the Christopher Priest written...
The phrase has never made any sense to me. I don't mind it.
I can't recall who the writer was, but Christopher Priest, Quesada did the art from the original miniseries when they relaunched that character many years ago. And Priest was the editor and then went on to become... He was actually James Allison, became the editor at the time before becoming just Priest, and then wrote the series. That was good stuff. But this is not the same character, so who gives a shit?
No, this is definitely not the same character. But, you know, I expected...
And I don't just mean that they've changed, like, the personality. I mean, it's actually a different character. So.
Yeah, like Blue Beetle, this is their another shot at getting adding some color, I guess, to
well, not to in the parents, the just heroes. In the kid.
Just to the kid, yeah. He's Korean American, is it?
Well, he's got to be adopted, just... right? Because both the parents were white. One's a blonde guy and one's a brunette, and they're white parents. So, I mean, they never said, but you got to assume he's an adopted kid. Yeah, Korean.
But basically, the whole idea behind it, I think for me, the whole idea was just telling about the troubles that he's having with his girlfriend and at school, and it was just hopping between, like, problems that he's having to him flying around the world, maybe fighting a battle, him being naked for most of it. I really, there was nothing
that part
in
you
here.
Like, admit it.
There was just nothing in this book that I liked, period. And I guess that to me it was, I expected something and I didn't get anything at all. It was just another teen book, really.
Keith?
Blah.
I'd say there was a bit of fun to it. If you liked Blue Beetle, if you liked you know, some of the Young Justice line, it fits in well with those. I don't, but you know, it is a lighter book like that. His whole origin doesn't make any sense to me.
No,
I kept trying to work that out. The beam that travels two states at 8 feet above sea level, but I did laugh at how. Offhand, he got away from actually trying to explain it. There's just a line that says, "I'll spare you all the mathematics and science babble," which means that I haven't even thought about how this would work, so I'm not even going to pretend that it makes any sense. I don't know, I might be curious to read a second one, but so I don't know if I want to, I think I'll put it at average. Because you know, I think once they're through all the gunk of the origin story, then maybe it'd be interesting. I don't know. It might have been better to start this without the origin story, the way they have so many of the 52.
Well, they kept on saying it's not an origin. He kept on saying, "I'll spare you the origin story stuff," and then they tell us the origin. It's like, what the... Anyways, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, no, this was an insult to comic books, really. The Ray, as a character, has always had only one thing going for him. He's never had an iconic arc. He's got one thing, a kick-ass costume. And what is the first thing they do? They give him a purple bikini. I hated this book so much. The characters, I mean, his parents find out he has powers and they smoke a doobie. That's really all that happens. No one, the girlfriend is the only one upset by the fact that he's hit by some sort of ray that gives him superpowers.
Yeah, she took it pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, she told him to go to the doctor.
Yeah. I mean, the parents, I mean, I like hippies, but hippies don't, I mean, come on. Even they're going to get upset that your son's hit by some sort of beam.
Wait. Stop the bus. Let's get to the most important thing we just heard all podcast. You like hippies?
Yeah, I think I'm just saying they're not drawn.
This book is California as seen through the eyes of someone from New York.
Yeah.
I also follow Jimmy on Twitter. He is so a New York boy, and yeah, it's so clear that this is his view of California. It bears no resemblance to the actual California.
By the way, Mo, Jack C. Harris.
Ah, was the writer. Thank you kindly.
Yes.
Thank you.
And just one last point. It's like they were working off some sort of nationality checklist.
Oh, absolutely.
Every character they introduced, it was like, let's make this guy boom. Let's make this guy boom.
Yeah, good point. It was the lead character is Korean. His best friend was black. His girlfriend was East Indian. Nice. I didn't even realize that, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was saying. You know, it just struck me, especially once his girlfriend shows up and she's Indian, and I'm like, really? You know? Wow.
I was just thinking, you know, it's okay to have doubles occasionally. I mean, I like ethnic diversity in comic books, but this was forced.
Yeah, okay, I'm gonna throw mine in there. As an actual read, I would put it in the average, like the art is fine. The new costume I think is a really nice costume, just not as cool as the old one. The thing is, again, what you got is a couple of issues that I have with this. Number one, there's just nothing to bring me back. There's nothing that makes it better or original from any other book, so you just ignore it. And the other thing is, again, you've pissed on a legacy character to me, because the Rey, while people may not realize it, was actually a second-generation superhero who had a dick father who always told him you're not good enough, and he was trying to accomplish, set himself as being as good as his father, but was always told by his father he isn't. So he had this, is quite an abusive relationship, was part of the core of the character. So of course you've thrown that out again. You don't remember that, Keith?
Well, yeah, but you're on about the third version of the Rey to be talking about which version you like. I mean, the character's been around since the 1970s.
Yeah, there's actually four versions of the Rey. The first one is Lem.
You don't like
Happy
the last
Carol.
One is what you're saying.
The third, he
really
likes
the last one.
Yeah, he likes the first two, and then the second, the last two, he doesn't like.
Okay.
Okay. Well, there you go. Okay, I missed something in between there, but that's again, you just. And the other thing I have a problem with is why is it that somebody gets superpowers? Why is it he's always an 18-year-old kid who already looks like he works out 7 hours a day? Like, why does somebody who is, say, actually looks like if you go down the mall and look at a kid, fat, out of shape, you know, North American, look like actually get powers? Like a lazy person, like a real person. Like, it's just ridiculous to me. This guy looks like he could run the Olympics and the decathlete already, and that's before he gets the powers. Why is it always an athletic? Come on, it's bad.
It's because he's
the Fabulous Frog Boy.
Well, you know what?
They'd all look like that, and he's never had a regular title.
Well, you know what? I think that's a little bit different. Number one, his gimmick was that he wasn't athletic, and he didn't have any powers, and he was a comedy character. What's wrong with actually giving a character who is not the athletic? Every new character, I don't care if it's the Blue Beetle, I don't care if it's every character who was being relaunched by DC and gotten powers would have been an above average athlete physical specimen to begin with. It just and the same thing with Marvel. I'm just sick of it. Like, just do, give me something different.
It's because he's from California, and everybody in California has a good build.
Actually, that is true. Good point. Brett, next book.
All right, let's tackle Voltron. Number one issue. Really didn't have. I know that there's some Voltron that has come before. Basically, it was like, I think you needed to read the Voltron that had come before, because I was pretty confused throughout most of the book. There was a lot of, it was a pretty quick read, a lot of action sequences. Yeah, you know, I got nothing really to say about it.
Captain Average.
It was Captain Average.
I couldn't figure out the story at all. You know, I watched the Voltron cartoon when I was a kid, and so all the characters are running around in the street talking about Voltron in the third person. Are they supposed to be, like, inside the...
That's what Volta? I thought. But...
Did I miss a plot point? Or, like, they don't seem disturbed by being outside of the robot, so I don't know. I was pretty confused.
Me too.
And it has, I guess, it's just been a long time. I do like that that the leader of the team's name is Keith. That doesn't happen very often. I think I just didn't remember enough of the cartoon for this to make much sense.
Which reminds me, Keith, I'd like to mention that my new name, I'm changing my name from Mo officially, legally, to Hunk.
Yeah, as far as I go, I'm putting this in average as well. I agree with everything you said. It's barely nothing. If you don't know what's going on, if you're not already a Voltron fan...
Or Voltron fan.
Yes. You're not going to get this book. We didn't, or I didn't get this book.
That's
and from the thumbs
people.
Of the guys, you didn't either. Just just average. There is nothing objectionable to it.
No, exactly. I think this is the same idea, and this is the problem with going forth in these reviews. You guys have nailed it again. I mean, this is a book that felt for me like it was already for existing fans, not really trying to appeal to a new fan base, which is, of course, what the four of us were and as reviewers. So I think in that it failed. As far as a book, it's probably pretty good. I will say I got one of the two Alex Ross covers on my book. They show all four of them in there. That's got to be the most boring Alex Ross art I've ever seen in my entire life. But, all right, Brett, next book.
I thought it was astounding that they show all 11 different covers.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, a variant this, variant that, special reverse color, and I don't know, whatever they're doing.
Yeah, why don't they just get it right in polybag it?
Because Marvel bought all the polybag companies. Brett, next book.
All right, we're going to move on. Let's jump into The Strain. Now, this is the adaptation of the Benicio del Toro and I believe it's Chuck Hogan book. And it's another vampire story.
Guillermo del Toro?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, Guillermo del Toro. Thank you very much.
But I want to read your book now.
It would probably be much crazier, I got to say. But, yeah, so this is an adaptation of the book. It's a vampire story. I mean, it's just kind of starting us off. Now, I think that it's a pretty interesting story overall. But for me, my biggest problem with adaptations is that I usually come down to, well, you know, I'd probably get more out of just reading the book. So, you know, I'm not, like, the comic book doesn't leap out at me, but, you know, it's not bad. It's pretty good.
I actually didn't know it was based on a book. I didn't notice that part. So, I think I'm going to go read the book. I was curious to keep going, but I think I would get more out of the book as well. My biggest complaint is on the credits page. It's not in the book itself. It's that they set up this mystery story, this monster thing. There's something going on in this plane. But they tell you on the credits page, it's a vampire story. So the big surprise that won't happen until sometime at least in the second issue is given away on the first page, like before you've even gotten to the book. I have no idea why they would just throw that out there other than, I guess, they felt that they had already told everyone, or everyone will have already read the book that they haven't read. There's no mystery to it. I'm not spoiling it because it's literally the first thing you read when you open the book. You haven't even gotten to the art yet. I like the pace of it. It reminded me of Quarantine 2, which is a direct-to-DVD that I enjoyed. I did learn something from the book because I was curious why they called the CDC, and then I did some Googling, and turns out that in the case of a biological attack, the CDC is in charge. So I've learned something new. I guarantee you,
I don't know how many people read this book, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000. You're the only one who did that.
It's what I do.
By the way, I'm just going to throw this out there. It's the first book of a trilogy.
Oh, see, I'm reading the comic then. There's no way I'm reading 1,000 or 1,200 pages of book.
Yeah, because if comic books,
back to the comic books for the lazy readers.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because now I can up my rating that I'm definitely going to keep getting this book. This is the Catwoman's meow. Because there's no way we're in, like, you know, 1,000 or 1,200 pages of book.
Yeah, if you were in school and had to do a book report, you would be a very happy person.
That's right. This is the Classics Illustrated of vampire.
I once got a 92 out of 100 after only reading the Classics Illustrated and grade 12 in English on a Charles Dickens book. So don't put those down.
Absolutely not. No. It's got us through many a time.
Chris, your thoughts on this book?
Yeah, no, it's funny that Keith actually said he liked the pacing, because that was my problem with the book. I'm just giving it a Captain Average. I found the pacing, it reminded me of some sort of TV miniseries or something.
That's a trilogy.
I liked the story, but I would have really liked to see it on like in an HBO thing. The visuals were great, but I'm not sure any of it really works in comic book form.
Actually, that's interesting, Chris. You know what? I bet you this is one where if you went back and you actually got a collected edition when it comes out, it would probably flow really nicely for you. But it might not. Some books aren't meant to be read month by month. Some books are. I thought this was a Catwoman's Meow. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the pacing. I liked the opening epilogue story, just kind of, and the way that tied in. I thought this was really, really interesting. And or what would you call it, Brett? You seem to be...
A prologue?
Prologue. Oh, what'd I say? Epilogue. My mistake. The prologue. I really enjoyed the prologue, the way they tied that into the rest of the story. I thought it was very well paced, personally, and I'm intrigued, and I'm not worried about the fact that I know it's a vampire story. I think that the lead villain seems like he could be a very, very interesting character. I can't wait. His origin was very interesting, and the fact that it's a vampire story, well, it doesn't seem to be a vampire story in the same way that we know, but it is more of a vampire. Again, it's called The Strain, right? So it's some sort of virus. There's enough that I was told to get me intrigued, but a lot for me still to discover. Like, how did this guy become this vampire-type character? Is not there, though they told us his very beginnings. So I think it's really, really... I think this is really, really good. Brett, next book.
So, next book... Carnage USA. Apparently there was another Carnage story, which I haven't read. This would be the sequel to that follow-up. It's basically Carnage against the Marvel Universe, I guess, to a certain degree. And it's got some really nice art in it. I've seen Clayton Crane's art on a Ghost Rider story. He's simplified it a lot from when he was doing the Ghost Rider stuff, but it's still pretty good. And overall, I mean, the story is, it's just all out carnage, really. I mean, as long as it's better than Maximum Carnage at the end, I'll be okay.
I enjoyed this. I wasn't thrilled with having the Avengers turn up. Would have rather a smaller group. I don't like the Red Hulk every time I come across him. I won't be trying Avenging Spider-Man again until they start the next storyline. I just don't like the character. I don't think there's anything unique about the character. The running joke of making fun of the Thing, which I thought would wear thin, just got funnier as it went on, actually. That was one thing I really enjoyed about the writing in this book. I also didn't read the original, but I don't think you really need to. It seems to be a completely self-contained. But with this, knowing it was the same writing and art team, I may go back, and I don't know if that's in trade, but it probably is, and worth looking at. I'm going to keep getting this. I'm going to go high average just because of it gets a bit muddy with the character, with the heroes that they put in.
Okay. I'm going low average. Love the art. As you like the witty banter, I didn't. I thought it paled in comparison to, say, when Bendis is writing the Avengers. I find the Spider-Man's quips much funnier there. I found the whole thing, making fun of the Thing, kind of...
The Thing?
Yeah, the Thing.
Tell me, what do you think of the Thing?
I found it kind of not working for me at all. I didn't find it funny. Didn't laugh at it at all. Other than the art, I'd say burn this, but the art is spectacular.
Yeah, I would agree with...
Or birdcage this.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree that the art was spectacular. I think the art was tremendous. The only thing better than the art was the art on the cover. I think this cover is just brilliant. I think it's just awesome. The book I'm really, really enjoying for the first part, and then I'm not enjoying it as much, but still enjoying it. And by the end, I was like, it wasn't that good, and I'm done with it, and I'm not coming back. It just wore on for me. It didn't get better. It got worse as the story went on. So not a terrible book, but... if it's not good enough for me to come back with, I don't know if I even say it's Captain Average. It probably goes to the Black Canary Birdcage liner. So, Brett, next book.
All right, well, our last book is Batman Noel. I actually haven't managed to finish it, so I don't have that much to say about it, but the art is spectacular. I really like the art, and it's very impressive, and the story seems, from what I've read, seems really good. So I do look forward to finishing it.
Yeah, you didn't have a chance to finish it because it's the only thing in the world longer than this podcast. Keith, go ahead.
Well, this is a book that I pushed on everyone. The art just blew me away. I've seen this artist before, the Joker graphic novel and a few other things. But this, he's really stepped it up. I assume it's digital, post-pro, because there's ink stuff in the back, like samples of the pencils and inks and such. But just beautiful art. It's basically what it's doing is telling about a fairly straightforward Batman story, but using the thread of A Christmas Carol to give structure to the tale, with Batman, not having an Ebenezer Scrooge thing, but being visited by ghosts, being visited by people he knows, who have kind of things to impart to him. Just really liked it, particularly the art. The art is just so beautiful in this book. I'd love to see this artist do regular work, but he said that he just can't make that kind of schedule, so he'll be sticking to graphic novels, which is okay too. This couldn't be more Cat's Meow. This is we're looking at doing an awards show of some kind next week.
We will. It's the Wee Talkies.
This is going to get everything.
The Wee Talkies.
The Wee Talkies. That's right. Yes. This is I sneak preview. Put all your money on this book to get a whole bunch of those awards.
Well, no, because it's a vote, and you only get one of them. Chris, your thoughts?
Actually, when Keith picked this book, I was, oh Lord, no. Christmas special by an artist, written by an artist. This is not going to go well. I wouldn't have picked it off the shelf. I wouldn't have touched it. I wouldn't have looked at it, other than the fact it's Batman. Three pages in, the child's narration just melts my heart, and I fall in love with this book. The choices they make for the ghosts are unique and entertaining, although it uses the Charles Dickens. I'm spacing here.
Charles Dickens
story as a skeleton.
A Christmas Carol.
I was just going with Charles Dickens, but yeah, A Christmas Carol. Uses that as a skeleton for the story. It has some unique and interesting turns in it. Really enjoyed it. Art was gorgeous. And I actually can't wait to see what the artist actually writes next.
All right. Keith, I'm going to ask you before I start my review. There's no more Elseworlds anymore, right?
Correct, but this is a non-continuity story.
Okay. How was I supposed to know that? Other than the fact that it doesn't make any sense with continuity. Well, shouldn't there be some way to differentiate that?
I don't know. I think...
What continuity was this in? This didn't make any sense for any continuity they've ever had.
No, and I did look at... I looked at an interview with him that he basically says that because he's so slow, he just said he doesn't even try. And the same as the... I think because I read the Joker one as well, which also doesn't fit anywhere in continuity. That I was prepared for that to be just self-contained.
Okay, well, some of the points in this storyline, in order for them to really, really emotionally connect to me, I need to have some connection to prior events that are known to us, but I don't see as part of the storyline, that continuity. And because it doesn't exist with any continuity, it's just making up stuff and throwing it against the wall, doesn't work for me. This book did not work for me at all. I found it boring, incredibly long. I thought that the Batman character was shallow, lowest common denominator writing, so easy to do, nothing innovative. The book went on for an incredibly long time. The art, while there was some beautiful, beautiful rendering in there, I did not appreciate the page layouts. I think there's a difference between beautiful art and beautiful art for comic books. And I also don't think that having a very realistic body and background style with these cartoony faces, as we're often getting, works also. I did not think this was good at all. And, of course, it doesn't help that it was a Christmas book. So if we're voting on this next week, it might be getting yours, but it won't be getting everybody's votes. I'll tell you that. Line the birdcage with this piece of shit.
Well, we've got 3 out of 4, so I think I'll still be okay.
we'll see how Brett thinks by the end. Brett, you'd have no idea by the end how boring this gets and how repetitive it gets.
Well, it'll be interesting for me to find out.
Okay.
We can't really vote on stuff, though, because it's four of us.
Well, what we'll be doing for the We Talkies is we'll be voting and we won't be voting. I don't know what we'll be doing. We'll come up with some form. I can tell you this. It's not going to be just comic books. We're going to have a few Easter eggs and other stuff in there and have some fun with it next week, too. And it'll be the first annual We Talkies. So I think we're going to go and exit here. Brett, why don't you do some plugs for what's going on with We Talk Comics, We Talk Podcasts, and everything else in the universe. And why don't you give contact information for everybody so we don't have to worry about Chris doing it.
All right. Well, let's see now. So we are finally up on iTunes. Hopefully everything, once we get this new episode up, will be it'll refresh everything. And so you can officially subscribe to us there. You can subscribe to us from Google, the feed reader as well. You can subscribe to us off of our website, wetalkpodcast.com.
Spread the word, everyone. Spread the word.
Yep. Really, we're trying. And we're still on Podomatic, but we're hoping to kind of push out to our own website and iTunes, et cetera. Let's see now. So let's go to Twitter. So I am Brett_WeTalk at Twitter. You are Mo_WeTalk at Twitter. Keith is Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and then Chris just is non-existent on Twitter.
He's on Friendster.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, while I'm Mo_, there's no E on my name, just M-O.
That's right, just M-O. All right, and we got four email addresses. I'm Brett@WeTalkPodcast.com. We got Keith@WeTalkPodcast.com, Mo@WeTalkPodcast.com, and Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. And
pretty safe. If you know how to spell our names and know how to spell We Talk Podcast, then I think you can find us.
Excellent. Brett, anything last that you want to plug or say before we go out?
Nope. I'm gonna say one thing. Sorry. I am going to say that judging by the quality of these books that we have been reading that are brand new, you know, there's a reason that we're more selective and that we tend to go back a lot more. It's because some of these are not very good books.
Keith, your thoughts. Final thoughts.
All right. Well, we've got our week talkies coming up. We have also... got an interview with Tyler James and Cesar Feliciano about Red 10 coming up. We just got our hard copies of Red 10.
And we got a scoop.
At Alpha Comics.
We got a scoop. We want
to
tell them.
And we got a scoop. And there's a scoop in that interview. We're not telling you what it is right now. There is a scoop. And we're able to get hard copies of Red 10. We made a trip to Alpha Comics and picked up hard copies, so that's great, too. And... it's almost Christmas break for me. My intention is to spend my reading time over the break rereading the New Universe for a series of $4 posts on our website.
Chris, final thoughts or anything else? Last thoughts?
No, not really, other than I can't believe you didn't look Batman Noel. But that's it for me.
Well, okay. I have no heart and no soul, so you have to keep that in mind. But I will nevertheless wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I think I'll give a shout out to something kind of odd. I found a reader for my Android tablet called Comic Mobi, and I think the technology behind it is excellent. So if you do read digital, I say you spend the $3 or $4. I can't remember what I spent on it, but I'm going to purchase it. And I think you'll find it very, very good. Other than that, we're going to leave you with something that... is our Christmas gift to you. Of course, once you hear it, you might decide it's our piece of coal left in the stocking. That'll be up for you to decide. But regular listeners will hopefully find this hilarious, and new listeners will hopefully get some enjoyment as well. And that's it. We're OUT. We Talk Comics is a jolly, happy show. We talk good books and those you miss and those that really blow.
We Talk Comics has Brett correcting names. He tells us wrong before too long, even though it's kind of lame.
Marvel at Schism, Kill the Torch put out 0.1. When DC relaunched, a bunch of Marvel books were done.
There must have been some magic in that Venom book, they say. Because when the book didn't suck, Keith said,
what the heck?
A We Talk Comics is as fun as it could be. Listen and laugh as they talk comic books just the same as you and me.
We Talk Comics knows Morrison is hot today. Our wish is still that his mainstream stuff would please just go away.
Marvel had great movies, success with the film Thor. DC had Green Lantern, but too bad it was a bore.
Chris was last of the podcast show and brought some great insight. Still, when it's time to give his email out, he never gets it right.
Keith gets on Twitter, always starts a war. Andy gets mad or even sad when Mo calls his mom a whore.
DC started over, we wondered how that could be. 52 brand new books, so why'd it feel like Batman's in 53?
What the hell's wrong with you? I didn't write that line.